parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Good morning, and welcome to Out the Box. I'm Simone, and it's so lovely to have you joining me today. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes I step back and I look at children and teenagers today and I think to myself, how are they managing life? The school pressure, the friendship pressure, the social media pressure, you know, the pressure to look okay, to feel okay, to behave okay. I've always said that the only thing I really want for my children is for them to be okay and to be happy within their context, meaning within their friendship groups, within school, within their own area that they are living in. And I really know it's not easy to be okay, especially in this ever-present digital world. Life has become virtual, mind the pun, and it's impossible to just be okay. So there are many things that children have to do. They have to fit in and they have to belong. That's only two of the things. And I say fit in because that's just looking like everybody else, dressing like everybody else. But it's not belonging because you're not accepted for who you are. You always pretending to be something else. And today, you know, I've chosen a topic that I really know very little about. It's called dialectical behavior therapy. It's a mouthful. I had to practice that dialectical part. And as I said before, I'm not familiar with it, but I do think that it's well worth finding out about what DBT is and how it can help us as adults as well as our children. So I invited Tova Goldstein, a social worker, director of The Key, a three principles practitioner, which I don't know what that is either, but she will enlighten us, and a DBT coach, to unpack this type of therapy and to explain how these skills that she will teach us about can help children, teens, and adults manage their anxiety, emotions, and life challenges. And when she walked into the studio today, I asked her if this story would be relevant, and she gave me the go-ahead. So let me just give you the quick story. I dream a lot, and my dreams are vivid. I often remember them exactly how, well, I guess how I think they were. And this dream was, let me just step back a moment and just say that being on the radio is quite an anxiety-provoking experience. And I prepare very, very well, but still I have anxiety around it. So I dreamt the night before last that I couldn't find my car. I couldn't find where I'd parked it. And this happens to me regularly because I don't look properly. You know, I don't take note of where I've parked. And I was searching for my car amongst a million other cars, frantically searching it because I had to leave where I was and be at the studio by 11 a.m. to do the show. And it was already 5 to 11 and I was asking people to help me. Where's my car? I couldn't remember the number plate. And I had to phone Howard and tell him I wasn't going to make the show. And at that point, as I phoned Howard and he said, no, you really, really do need to come, I woke up. And I recognized that this is a dream around my anxiety. So as we go through this, I'm going to ask Tova just to tell me about why I dream only about anxious things. I don't wake up and have, you know, a lovely dream and say, oh, I dreamt I ate 4 slabs of Top Deck or whatever it is. It's always around anxiety. So, Tova, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
We're going to go into what exactly DBT is and just sort of how it's different from other forms of therapy. And then, if you can, can you just explain why I dream so vividly about such anxiety-provoking things?
Amazing. Sounds like fun.
So let's get into what exactly is DBT.
Okay. So firstly, well done for practicing dialectical behavior therapy.
Yeah,
it is a bit of a mouthful, I agree. And, you know, the D, the dialectical, and the B, the behavior, are the two obviously key components to what this therapy is about. And the concept of dialectics is this concept of two, right? So as an example, there can be two truths at the same time. So for example, I can really believe something to be true for me, and you can feel the absolute opposite of that, and that can be true for you, and we can both be right.
Okay.
Two people can have two completely different opinions about something, and they can both be right. When just that concept in itself, when we get that, it frees ourselves up from needing to prove that we are right and that you are wrong. And it frees ourselves up from me needing to show you that you are wrong and that you need to come over to my side, because it doesn't matter. We are both entitled to have our own opinions about things. So that's one of the concepts of dialectics. Another beautiful concept of dialectics is that we can have two opposite feelings at the same time. So for example, I can feel completely, if you use the radio show, you know, you could feel completely anxious about, you know, running your own radio
yes.
show, and also really excited
yes.
to have this experience.
We were having right? that conversation. You said to me, but are you enjoying it? And I am
right.
loving it.
But it also is very anxiety provoking.
Yes.
And we can do both at the same time. You can be devastated at the loss of a loved one and relieved that they are no longer suffering.
Mm.
You can miss somebody and be grateful that they are happy wherever they are.
Mm.
So this concept of us being able to hold two different emotions at the same time also allows us to just be in whatever space we're in.
Mm.
You know, we don't need to just be one way. It doesn't have to be that I'm only allowed to feel one thing about something. I can open myself up to feel a myriad of feelings, and they can all be very different from each other, and that is perfectly appropriate. So that's the idea of the dialectics.
So just going back to when you said that, because it seems like they're two different, the dialectical, it's two different types of feelings. So the first one was, you said that a person can feel something and another person feels the opposite of that something, and
mm-hmm.
you don't have to argue about it. I don't have to get you on my side.
Exactly.
But with teenagers, that isn't so clear, because teenagers tend to argue, particularly ADHD teenagers. You know, it kind of it spurs them on. So how
who do they argue with? Their parents?
Their parents, right. Or their siblings.
Right.
But not their friends.
So imagine if everyone in the room knew that it was okay for them to have their truth. What would happen to the argument? There wouldn't really be one.
Right, I understand that, but it's difficult to explain. Well, for my teenager particularly, it's difficult to explain to him that I can have my view and he can have his view, and they're both the same. He has to win the argument.
Well, the reality is that there is only an argument if two people are in the game, right? So if I pick up a rope and then you pick up the other side of the rope, now we're in a tug of war,
right.
You and me. But what would happen if you decided to just not pick up that other end of the rope? What would happen to the tug of war?
It would end.
It wouldn't exist, right? So the minute we decide to step out of the ring, the minute we decide we don't need to do this, then it takes the argument to a very different place, because now it's like, I understand. I get it. You're fully entitled to your opinion. So am I. We can argue about that if you want to, or we can just agree to disagree. It's quite infuriating for someone to be told,
yes,
let's agree to disagree,
yes,
especially when they really want to be right. But ultimately, the only way an argument can occur is if two people are in the ring.
So are you saying that in a situation like that, the adult needs to adult
mm-hmm.
and step back?
Absolutely.
Because you won't win.
And we don't have to.
And we don't have to.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. It's also, we also need to ask ourselves, well, what do we want? What do we want? Do we want to be right? Do we want peace? Do we want the other person to see the truth? Do we, you know, there's so many different things that we could want. There's no wrong or right answer to that question. But once we decide what we want, we can then take action according to what we want. So that's really up to us to decide.
I like what you're saying, and a lot of a lot of advice has come my way. And one piece of advice that was really pertinent was somebody said to me, "You can't go through the front door; you have to go around the back with teenagers." And you know, you can't have that fight head on, but there must be ways that we can bring our own opinions in quietly, because sometimes the child or the teenager is absolutely wrong. And as you say, we're okay that they're wrong, but how do we then teach them what's right?
Well, what's your job as a parent? What's your job? Is your job to teach your kids what is right?
Mm.
Or is your job to give them the tools to figure that out for themselves? It really just depends on what we decide is our responsibility. You know, one of the things that you mentioned at the beginning is how we want our kids to be happy in their own space. You know, even that as a goal for parents,
I don't know if that's elusive.
Yeah, that's not really meant to be one of our goals.
Yes.
Because is that something that we are able to do? You know, it's not possible to always be happy. That is just not part of anyone's reality ever.
Yeah.
So if our goal is for our children to be happy,
well, perhaps we happy kind of set ourselves
up
word.
To fail.
Yeah. Perhaps happy is the wrong word. Perhaps it's more of
peace of mind,
comfort in the situation that you are. I'm not talking about that there shouldn't be discomfort,
right?
Because I think that's a fault of many of us today,
right?
That we swoop in and we want to save our children.
Exactly. So we don't actually allow them to learn resilience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for me, it's not about showing them what's right and what's wrong, because if you think about it, we're all doing the best we can with the information that we have. That's it.
Mm.
So, you know, I've had many discussions with my children about things that I know objectively are wrong.
Mm.
And they are like, "But I've done the research and it's fine." And the truth is, they have. So if I know that it's wrong and they know that it's right, who are we to argue? As far as they're concerned, this is what's right for them in this moment. The greatest gift we can give to them is to be there for them when they need us,
right?
To be in their corner, and for them to know that we are in their corner, so that when they do realize that, oh, this actually wasn't the best thing for me, they've got someone to fall back on.
And to say, you know, it's okay, not I told you so.
Yeah, I'm
just
here.
I'm here.
I love you. I've got you.
Right.
So I don't think that our job is to teach them what is right and wrong. We can guide them.
Mm.
We can be a role model that they can look at and say, that's the sort of person I want to be like one day. You know, but ultimately for us to sit and tell them what to do, and especially as teenagers, they need to figure this out for themselves. Part of their growth is to figure it out for themselves, not to be told what to do.
Toba, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to just go to a quick ad break, and I want our listeners to think about what we've been saying, because when we come back, we're going to be taking it a little further.
Out the Box is brought to you by the South African Jewish Museum. Preserving our past, celebrating the present, and inspiring our future.
I'm Simone, and you're listening to Out the Box on Chai FM 101.9. We're speaking to Tova Goldstein, a social worker, director of The Key, as well as an expert of DBT, which is a type of therapy that offers skills. So Tova, we were speaking earlier about truths, your truth, my truth, and how we need to allow our children to experience something instead of trying to convince them, which is impossible anyway. So it's experiences. And you'll speak later about how we give them skills to to guide them through these experiences. And I loved how you said that parents need to be there. If the child does experience something in a negative way, we don't say, I told you so, but we go back to, I'm here for you, how can I help you? When we compare our childhoods to those of children today, do you think young people are facing a very different set of pressures, and why? And I'm speaking to social media and this kind of access to the world that we never had before.
Right.
And so perhaps the anxiety is exaggerated because of that, because of this access.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting because on the one hand, life today is so much harder for teenagers and for kids. It really is, because they are navigating so much more than we had to when we were teenagers.
Yes.
So it is so much harder. But on the other hand, in the end, everyone needs the same thing that they did 100 years ago and 200 years ago and 20 years ago. And as parents, the offering that we can give to our children is the same. It's the same. You know, what they need is still the same, even though the life that they are navigating is so much more complex.
Yes.
And so much more layered. What they need is still the same. That has not changed.
So what is the same?
What
when you say they need the same,
right?
What is that same?
Well, you know, there's a whole lot of different elements, because one of the things that I think teenagers do need today, which is maybe a little bit different to what it was, is the ability to process their lives and the ability to maybe be more aware of their experiences. Where, you know, we may not necessarily have needed that because life was just so much simpler back then. But today, as you said, with social media, with the crazy busyness of life, just having, building the ability to be aware of what am I feeling right now? What am I experiencing right now? Why is this feeling coming up for me right now? How is it impacting me? How can I help myself? Just that is something that I think is an incredible learning that we can maybe provide for our kids. So that, I would say, is maybe the different part of what
of
we can give our kids.
Yes.
But ultimately, that love, knowing that there is someone that is in their corner, knowing that there is someone that believes in them, being able to create a home that has warmth, that is lighthearted, that is a place that they're happy to come back to, that has not changed. And that is something that as parents we can do.
Yes.
So I can't make sure my child is happy all the time, and I shouldn't try, because that's not the wisest goal. But I can create a home that is warm and happy and lighthearted. That is something that is within my power.
Absolutely. And it often astounds me that my little one, when he comes back, he shares everything. He's totally unfiltered. And I'm very grateful for that, although that a lot of it puts me into panic mode.
Right.
I am so grateful that he does come and say, you know, this has happened, this is what I did, what do you think of that? And like I'm panicking inside and the sirens are going off.
Right.
But that is what we want as parents.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So sometimes when people hear the word therapy, they're immediately assuming serious mental health struggles.
Right.
And while that is very, very important, and I'm not saying that DBT couldn't deal with, because I'm sure that it does deal with serious mental health struggles as well. But is it also for everyday children and teens to benefit from DBT?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you said that. And that's the B, right? The B part of DBT, which is the behavior, is the actions that we can take to help ourselves. And I think that takes us out of this kind of victim state. Often people find themselves as passive recipients to life. You know, somebody does something to me that I didn't choose, or someone said something to me that I did not want, or something happened to me. And that happens to us all the time.
Yes.
And when that happens, it often leads us to feel stuck, and we feel like we are victims because I didn't have a say in this.
Yes.
Now, the behavioral part of DBT, and it's not only in DBT, it's in many different psychology paradigms, is what can I do about it now? Yes, that did happen. What can I do to help myself now? And that takes us out of that victim state and puts us in an empowered state.
So you're taking the why me?
Yeah.
That question exactly. Of why did this happen to me,
right,
to a different level?
Yeah. And the answer to that is, I don't know. Mm. I don't know.
Mm.
But I do know that there is still something that you can do today. And people love skills.
Mm.
Having something that you can hold on to, having something in your back pocket that you can pull out in any given moment when you feel anxious, panicky, when the sirens are going off in your head,
yes,
you know, after having a conversation with your teenager,
yes,
your whatever it might be, or exams, or just life in general.
Mm.
To know that there is something that actually works, mm, that you can do to help yourself, is an incredibly empowering space to be in. And that's something that DBT offers.
It's a toolkit.
Exactly, exactly. That is exactly what it is. And part of that toolkit is knowing, mm, is the dialectics, which is saying, I am really struggling right now,
mm,
and I am able to help myself. That right. is also the dialectics.
Yes.
Right? So it's so important for us to have that awareness of, I'm struggling right now, and I also know that I have tools to help myself.
Right. If I think of kids, or children rather, and teenagers saying, you know, I'm dyslexic or I have another type of learning difficulty, I know that, but I am going to try do something about it. So giving them a skill set, and as parents, we will put everything into a child who does have learning barriers, but knowing that it's within their own context.
Absolutely.
And accepting what you are able to achieve.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as in distinctions, etc. I just mean, what is your level of achievement, your
right.
level of potential,
yeah.
and accepting that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anxiety tends to get all the attention,
mm.
like so much attention. If you speak to people, it's anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. It kind of is the celebrity of emotional
feelings,
challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah. But DBT does help with so much more than anxiety.
Well, it helps with feelings in general,
mm.
right? Celebrity or no celebrity.
Right.
It helps with all feelings, you know, that we experience.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, one of the concepts that I love about DBT is that it looks at feelings as more information about where we are right now. Right? So if somebody is feeling anxious, that doesn't mean that they're an anxious person. It just means that they are having anxious feelings. And if you think about it, there are two very different things. Being an anxious person means I am defined by my feelings of anxiety. I am now that person.
Yes.
As opposed to saying, not necessarily, I'm a human, I'm a person, who happens to have a lot of anxious thinking
yes.
or a lot of anxious feelings about something.
You're living with it. It's not
no.
who you are.
It's not who I am. It's just where I am right
mm.
now.
Mm.
And what's so important for me is for us to be okay with our humanity. Being alive in this world and being a human means I'm going to feel every single feeling there is to feel. It's not something that I can have a choice over.
Yes.
The fact that I'm living in this world means I'm going to feel every single feeling there is to feel. And some of those feelings make me feel great, and some of those feelings don't make me feel good at all. But they are legitimate, and they are appropriate. So if we break it down, if we have a teenager who is feeling extremely anxious because they've got exams coming up, would you say that that feeling of anxiety is appropriate?
Yes.
It's 100% appropriate. Now, if a feeling is appropriate, that means that there's nothing wrong with it. And if there's nothing wrong with it, that means you don't necessarily have to do anything about it.
But Tova, in that example that you're using with exams,
right.
that, you know, when children go in, particularly children who struggle, they go in and all the information that they have kind of disappears because
of their high
their
level
of anxiety.
Right. Now imagine if that child, if that teenager gave themselves permission to feel anxious. What would happen to that anxiety? Because often what happens is we have our anxiety And then we think to ourselves, oh, what is wrong with me that I'm so anxious? Why can't I be like everyone else who seems to contain their anxiety? Maybe I need to go on to more medication. Why do I have to be on so much medication? I hate myself that I'm so anxious all the time. Now I'm so depressed because I'm anxious. Now I'm filled with this self-hatred and self-judgment and et cetera, et cetera. So instead of just having that anxiety, we're now adding on self-judgment, self-criticism, self-hatred, depression, anger, all of these things. So instead of just dealing with anxiety, we're now dealing with a massive amount of feelings.
Mm.
But if we were just able to say, this is okay, it doesn't feel good, but it's appropriate.
And when there's a complete like meltdown with exams, particularly in matric, you know, children writing prelims, mini prelims, there's a tremendous amount of anxiety.
So that's where the skills come in. Because the skills, and this is one of the reasons why I love DBT so much, because it's not saying, I'm going to help you get rid of anxiety. It's not saying that.
Mm.
Because we are human. And anxiety is one of the many feelings we are going to experience, all within 1 hour, perhaps, right? But what it says is, the minute your feelings start getting in the way of you living your life, let's look at skills to just lower the intensity of it, so that you can still live a perfectly, beautifully, effective, functional life, right? Knowing that it is 100% appropriate to have some of these difficult feelings sometimes.
So is putting a child in a separate venue, for example, is that helpful?
If that is helpful to that child, then yes.
Right.
I don't think that they're blanket rules.
Yes.
For everyone, it's going to be different.
Right.
You know? So we look at the individual and we say, what do you need?
Mm.
You know, and a skill that would work for me might not work for you because we're all subjective individuals. So something that will resonate with me, that will be able to bring my nervous system back down to its equilibrium might be something, you know, that wouldn't be helpful to you at all. And that's where, you know, the skills are so subjective and there's so many that we can look at a whole bunch and say, well, what resonates with you? What is helpful to you when you feel like your nervous system is being activated and you are, you know, feeling like you're getting into that panicked state? What would be helpful to you?
So that panic state is an excessive amount of emotion.
Right.
The way I understand it is that some anxiety is actually good in a way because it drives you.
Right.
Instead of just sitting back, if you have zero anxiety, you're just going to sit back and do nothing.
Well, all feelings in general are motivators.
Mm.
You know, so there's, you know, why are feelings good? Why are feelings useful? Because they motivate us.
Mm.
They also let us know how we're doing, right? So they give us information. My feelings let me know how I am right now. And they might let us know if we are safe or unsafe. So feelings are very good. Feelings are also really unhelpful when they don't allow us or they prevent us from living the life that we are meant to be living.
Right.
And when we are in that space, that's when we pull out our skills.
Right.
But in order to do that, we first have to have awareness. Awareness is the first step to mental health.
Yes.
To just be able to know, okay, I need a bit of help right now.
And being able to, as you said, come to your parents and ask for that help.
Or anyone.
Don't solve my problem, or anyone, a therapist. You know, I'm not here for you to solve it, but I want to know how I can actively help myself.
Right.
Which
just
is empowering.
Bring myself down.
Yes.
Just to bring myself back down again.
Right. Why do you think that DBT is particularly effective in anxiety, when you look at other modalities of therapy? Why does DBT resonate with you?
So, look, I do different modalities as well, and I'm certainly not going to say DBT is, you know, the only one. There are so many incredible different therapy modalities that people use, and I think they are all effective.
Right.
I do think they are all effective. I love DBT for two reasons. The one is that I actually love, there's a beautiful spiritual component to DBT, which really resonates with me personally. And that is that part of that humanity, that understanding of this is okay, this is okay. I'm anxious and I'm healthy at the same time. This is okay. I don't have to feel okay to be okay. I can be okay and struggle at the same time. And there's just something so wholesome and beautiful about that. And that speaks to me a lot personally. So that's the psycho-spiritual component to DBT, which I love. And I think clients love skills. People like to walk away with something. You know, so it's the narrative therapy is obviously something that I love as well. But when you walk away with, oh, so when I'm struggling, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
That is super helpful because it's very, it's tangible. It's something you can take home in your hand, you know.
I think that's really, really poignant because our kids, and, you know, my passion is around kids with barriers to learning, physical, you know, physical barriers and cognitive mental barriers.
Right.
And they often think that they are broken. And that's sad for me because I think that they often are in an environment that does not scaffold them in the best way possible. I'm not saying that they don't do it at all. I think that schools try really hard to scaffold children. And as I've always maintained, it's important for us to be collaborative. But it goes without saying that children with barriers in the mainstream, especially teenagers, can see themselves as struggling, as broken, as I said before, as not belonging because of their difficulties. And I think what you're saying is that acceptance of difficulties and then, you know, giving the opposite. So kind of, I do struggle, but actually I can improve on the way that I see my struggle.
Right. And just to, you know, to add on to that, so DBT uses the word and, not the word but. So it's because it's completely collaborative.
Yes.
I do struggle and I do the best I can. Or I do struggle and I also have unbelievable, amazing strengths in this area. You know, so we like to just work together as a whole person with everything that we bring to the table.
And it reminds me of something that I've learned when I was doing the winter school at Bella Vista was they say not yet. You know, it's not, it hasn't happened now, not yet. Not that it won't happen.
Right. And it might not.
And it might not.
Can we be okay with that?
Yes.
Can we be okay
learning. With it? I'm learning. We're coming back to that. To all of you out there, think of what we've been talking about. You can send your WhatsApps to 061-895-1019.
Out the Box is brought to you by the South African Jewish Museum. Preserving our past, celebrating the present, and inspiring our future.
You're listening to Out the Box, and if you've just tuned in, we're speaking about DBT and how it helps children regulate emotions. We're joined by Tova Goldstein, who is, amongst many other things, also a DBT practitioner. I have a WhatsApp, which is great, because I think that just, awesome. You know, leads us into what real life is.
Right.
Hi, Simon and Tova. My son asks me the same anxious question over and over again. I answer him, but 5 minutes later, he asks the same question again. Should I keep reassuring him, or is there a better way to respond?
Wow, I love that.
And I can relate to that because it's that cyclical thinking, and it doesn't matter how many times someone says to you, you know, it's okay, or I reassure you, that reassurance doesn't stay with you.
Right. So, firstly, what an awesome kid, because he knows that his mom is a safe place.
Yes.
And what an awesome mom that she constantly reassures him.
Yes.
So thank you, you know, and for being that person to the mom out there. Just maybe two different kind of answers that are coming to mind at the moment. I think if we think about what anxiety is, anxiety generally is future driven, right?
Yes.
So anxiety usually comes from worrying about what is going to happen next, not believing that we have the ability to cope with what might happen next, not knowing the future, so there's no control. It's kind of a blank page, which is can be completely terrifying for people, and just that unknown space. And, you know, we play so many different worst-case scenarios in our head, and all of them are scenarios that we just won't be able to cope with. And that is generally what causes anxiety. Would you agree?
I think it's the anticipation of what might happen. We don't know if it will or if it won't.
Exactly.
I mean, I take my own father as an example. He's fantastic. He has an outlook of if it hasn't happened yet, there's no point in worrying about it.
Amazing. But so many people, we spend so much time in the future. And that's what creates so much anxiety. And it's the belief that we aren't going to manage whatever may come our way. So, you know, so as one of the things about DBT is being present.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole, one of the foundations of DBT is mindfulness, which is tools, practicing tools on how to be present in the moment. Because right now I'm fine. In this minute, I'm 100% fine. I don't know what's going to happen in 5 minutes' time. I have absolutely no idea. But right now, I'm okay. So can I be okay in this moment? So, and that's just something that DBT teaches us. But with regards to this question, we can reassure and we can reassure. But the truth is we don't know what's going to happen either. So it might be that the reassurance that we give isn't exactly what they need, because it's also not weighted in knowledge, because we don't know.
Yes, it's not a truth, because often kids will say to you something traumatic will happen, or God forbid a child loses a parent, and they'll say to you, you know, mommy, I don't want you to die, and you go, don't worry,
exactly,
I won't.
Right, and we can't say that to our children, because then we might also be liars.
Yes.
You know? So we can't tell them that, oh, no, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, because it might not be. So the reassurance that we can maybe give is, I don't know what's going to happen next. And I'm also a bit nervous about that. I totally agree with you that you're feeling nervous about that. I'm also a little bit nervous.
Yes.
What I do know is that you've been in tricky situations before and you've gotten out of them. Do you remember when this happened and you did that? And do you remember when that happened and you did that? That was pretty amazing. So you've already proven to yourself that you can handle tricky situations. So I know that even if that does happen, I know that you have got whatever it takes to deal with it.
Amazing.
I trust that you've got that. And that's the reassurance. So it's not about saying, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. We don't know.
No.
We have no idea ourselves.
Yeah.
But if we know for us and for our kids, you've done hard things before.
Yes.
And look at you now. You're phenomenal.
Yes.
So you can do hard things.
So our brain's alarm system can be ringing. It's not logical, perhaps.
Right.
Sometimes it is logical, but sometimes it's not logical. And the fear isn't rational, but we can...
But it's true
for
them.
What I'm understanding is it's true for them, and we are empowering them with the feeling that they are able to deal with the situation.
They can do this. Yeah. And what I love about this concept of parenting is that we have an amazing opportunity all the time to point our kids in the direction of their own mental health. So every time you see your kid doing something that is healthy or positive, say to them, you did that. That was amazing. How did you do that? I would have been crying on on the floor in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That was amazing that you were able to do that. You know, so every time they extend themselves, every time they are able to, you know, be aligned in some way, the more we point that out to them, the more they realize, I've got this. I can do this. And
so
that's
we're
empowering.
Not giving false reassurance.
No.
Which is important, because I think a lot of us do that. I mean, me included.
Well, we do it because we also want everything to be okay.
Yes.
We do. We
because
want
you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. Is that the right saying? Did I say
something
that correctly?
Like that. I don't know if I entirely buy that, because I believe that we can be happy and also worried about our unhappy child.
Yes, it's that
right?
But. You know, you've got to get your head around that.
Exactly.
It's that but.
So I don't really agree when people say that personally.
Yes.
Because we can find complete inner joy within ourselves no matter what's going on around us. That's also an empowered space that we can. But the idea that that the reassurance that we give them, it needs to be weighted in truth.
Mm.
That's what will allow them to feel reassured.
Mm.
And that is usually based on historical evidence, which is, but you did that.
Mm. And they learn from experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, guided by a parent, you know, a parent, we always say, you know, why doesn't my child, a dentist once said to this, why doesn't my child brush their teeth? And they said, well, do you brush your teeth in front of your child?
Mm.
And I'd never thought about that.
I love that.
We just have to go off for 1 second and we'll be back in a moment.
Out the Box is brought to you by the South African Jewish Museum. Preserving our past, celebrating the present, and inspiring our future.
Welcome back, and if you've just joined us, we're speaking to Tova Goldstein about dialectical behavior therapy. I took the plunge, Tova. I said it. Did
well
I get
done.
It right?
Perfect.
I have another WhatsApp, which really is so great that parents are sending in WhatsApps, parents, grandparents, even teenagers and children themselves. And as I've always said before, this is a safe space, and we do it anonymously. So please feel free to send your suggestions and your questions to 061-895-1019. Tova, another WhatsApp. As a mom, I sometimes wonder whether my own anxiety rubs off on my children. Can parents unintentionally contribute to a child's anxiety? And can DBT help parents too?
Beautiful. Wow. So the answer is definitely yes. If we are dysregulated, we are not going to be able to be level-headed. The conversations that we have with our children are going to be coming from a place of dysregulation as opposed to a place of calm, you know, I'm at my, you know, at my equilibrium, right? So it's so important for us to know, well, what state of mind am I in now? Because I need to have a conversation with my child, or I need to react to my child's behavior or whatever. If I am dysregulated, then that conversation is going to look very different than if I am in my equilibrium space and I'm in the zone and I am emotionally regulated. So yes, the more anxious we are, we absolutely can affect our own children's level of anxiety. If you have two dysregulated people trying to have a conversation, you know, it's only going to go one way.
But Tova, you can be, well, the question is, can you be dysregulated in a certain area? For example, I experienced a trauma where my best friend's brother was killed in a car accident at the age of 18. And that was really traumatic, not only for them, but, you know, from those of us who were part of their world. So when my children drive, and it's so anxiety provoking for me,
right.
I find it so difficult to not say to them, don't drive in the rain, don't go too fast, watch out for the potholes. And really, today's roads are shocking. I have to hold back. It's really, really hard for me.
Yeah.
But I feel that if I tell them how scared I am, it will make them scared.
Right. And then you're just putting your stuff onto them.
Exactly.
Right. So, you know, it's also important to know, to have an awareness of the fact that we are being triggered. If you think about what a trigger is, a trigger is just, it's a memory.
Mm.
It's an active memory. So it's your brain saying, oh, something happened here. It's your brain remembering that something happened here. So when we are triggered, what do we need to do? Instead of offloading onto our children, right? We need to take care of ourselves. So we need to say, oh, wow, I'm being triggered right now. I need to take care of myself. I need to just maybe go a little bit easy on myself right now because I've just been massively triggered. That's all. It's also giving us information.
But how do we, for example, how would I say to my boys, be careful, watch out for, you know, drive defensively, watch out for potholes when it rains? If I say it like that, am I making them anxious? Am I taking my anxiety and...
It also depends on your kids. It depends on how you say it, right? There's so many ways of giving over information in a lighthearted way, in a positive, uplifting way.
not this can happen.
Right.
Right.
If
more
you do
of
this, then you
think
know.
About this, you know, when you're driving,
right.
just be aware.
Yeah. I also think that we need to trust ourselves as parents.
Mm.
You know, sometimes we are going to say completely the wrong thing and do the totally wrong thing and then judge ourselves and be filled with self-criticism. And that is part of us being human.
And we can also see that fault and say to us,
exactly.
And what would the and of that be?
I messed up and I'm going to do better next time.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And sometimes we'll, you know, be the best parents in the world and we'll be so proud of ourselves. And welcome to being human.
Yeah, the best parents in the world. I'm not sure how many of us can speak to that.
I think we have little glimpses of it every now and then.
So, Tova, you know, there's so much that we can get into, and I'd love to actually have a workshop with you where you teach us how to apply those skills.
Yeah, we can definitely do stuff on emotional regulation, on mindfulness,
That would be really, really great.
Yeah.
So as a final question or thought, after everything that we've discussed today, what's the one message? And I think I know what it is, but let me just see if it is the same thing. What's the one message you'd most like our listeners to take away about DBT, anxiety, and raising emotionally healthy children?
Right.
I mean, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
In one thought.
Yeah. I think for me, emotional health doesn't mean jumping up and down with joy all day long. For me, someone who is emotionally healthy is someone who is aware of what they are feeling. They understand where it's coming from, and they're okay with it. That is someone who's emotionally healthy. So you can be crying and be in your peak of emotional health in that moment. And that's what we want to achieve. Emotional health means that whatever I'm experiencing right now is okay, and I am okay.
That really does. It's really profound. I mean, I think our listeners need to consider that and go back and listen to the podcast so that you can take everything in. Tova, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's really been a fascinating conversation, and I can't wait to go into it a little bit more.
Awesome.
I'd like to leave you with a thought from the founder of DBT, Dr. Marsha Lionhand. Did I say that correctly? People are doing the best they can, and they can do better.
Love that.